lion chased him, and the rabbit leaped across that stream. And the lion stopped at the stream and would not go across. So he said, ah, that is very good. So the rabbit that night, as the sun went down, built the fire and stayed very close and dried off his fur. But he didn't go to sleep. He just laid there wondering if that lion's going to figure out how to get close to him. Sure enough, where the shadows end or the light ends at the boundary of that shadow from the fire, were these two eyes just circling him. He thought, oh, boy, have I got another clue what he's afraid of? And he figured out he's afraid of that fire. So he thought, well, he's afraid of water. He's afraid of fire. So I think I'll hug this fire and nurse it till maybe daylight comes, and maybe he'll get tired and go to sleep. Sure enough, he went to sleep. So the rabbit, while he was laying there with his eyes closed, a thought came through his head that he's heard from his legends, that there's his land that was splitting, drifting away slowly. So his great-grandfathers told a story how he used to just jump over and go eat this beautiful green grass and come back. But as time went along, it got to the point that you had to make a running leap to get on the other side. So he thought, huh, if I am lucky, I think I'll know what I'll do. So when he woke up that morning, he saw that the lion was snoring away. He took off, found that particular territory, and he noticed that it takes a great effort to get across. So what he thought he'd do is he put a stake here, leaped across, put a stake there, took a vine, held it together. And then he would go and get the lion and go and entice him at the proper moment. Each day went by, those particular stakes started squeaking, and the vine looked like it was straightening out. Boy, them ticks are all over the place, aren't they? Or I brought it with my dog, I don't know. But anyway, when he thought the time was just right, he leaped onto the other side and built the fire. He leaped back and went and enticed the lion to chase him. And sure enough, here come the old lion, and he started fooling around with him until he got mad, and he just make a straight run. He leaped onto this island and went to the fire and remained there. And that lion kept circling, but he wouldn't get near him. One early morning while the lion was sleeping, the rabbit could hear the vine starting to snap just a little bit. He ran back across, chopped it with an axe, land slid away. This is why the lion is in Africa. We were, number one, wasn't quite sure, even us like Billy and myself and other people that we consider ourselves trying to put these pieces together. I heard this legend. I'm 52 years old. I've heard that legend since I was 2-3 years old that I can remember. When I was in about sixth grade, I told that legend to my, geography class? And I said, I understand in our legend that the earth drifts apart. No, there's nothing like that. We don't believe you. We're white man. We know. Today, they tell you there's a continental drift. Did we get stuck on that? I don't know. Another legend says, we came through the ice people. That means when the land freezes, they come on through. And then each group of people, they were hunting and find their particular location, the way they live, maybe an Asian area. Whatever that territory looks like, it must be similar here somewhere. Mountains, deserts, plains, woodlands, seas. So that's the only form that we know how we got here. Any other? It sounds like it. It's right in that, they're in that one slough area where they have their houses. Beautiful looking people. They live in that water. And I met the other groups that was probably being forced to live in other houses. And it was kind of, when I saw them in the concrete houses, they looked so pathetic. But when they lived in their original form, they looked very majestic and proud. What a transition if you don't know how to live under confinement. Any other question?
Thank you.
think you put it in the best scenario I ever heard. All the we would call it in our language, even the enemies came together to this time of celebration, like which is now. And maybe a little bit further down the line it would have been, because I know the sun is starting to get hot here. The corn might have come up and wiggled. And almost like all enemies, I don't think they were enemies. They just didn't get along because of the political feelings of those days. But they would become neutral and celebrate here. So that might be very well true. But 2 seconds worth. Seminole Tribe was organized in 1957. They have elected leaders now, which I'm an elected leader, but I'm not a dictator or anything like this. Elected every 4 years. And we have progressed in what they call a modern-day type situation. We pay taxes. Only the government doesn't pay taxes. And the election is every 4 years. And we're doing quite well with this new adventure, putting little spots on another number and all this is doing great for us. And bingo! Okay, if there's no other questions, I thank you very much for tolerating me. And Shonabish.
Thank you. Chief James Billy, Seminole Tribe, and we thank you so much. I'd like to invite our visitors to visit the Seminole Family Camp, which is near the old marble stage. And at the Seminole Family Camp, you will see traditional chikis, which have been built by the Seminoles. And underneath those chikis are members of the Seminole tribe demonstrating various crafts, including doll making, basketry, and the Seminole patchwork making. There are also women that are sharing their personal experience stories. And this afternoon, Mary Johns, a member of the Seminole tribe, will be here at 4 o'clock on this stage, talking about some of the Seminole legends that she knows that she learned as a young girl. Our schedule has changed again, and for those of you who are looking in the program and wondering what is going on, it is 2 o'clock, and 2 o'clock we were scheduled for a Lillian Arc with a Grupo Folclorico. Instead, we are going to introduce African storytelling at this point. This stage has kind of evolved today. For those of you who have been with us for a while, we've had to be very flexible, but I do want to point out to you that our schedule is a little radically different from what is printed. This is the Folklife Area stage. The next person that will be appearing on this stage is an Afro-American storyteller. He comes from Leon County in Tallahassee. He has been very active in sharing his stories through the Tallahassee Library System. And one of the things that we have learned during today is that the sharing of our stories helps bind us together. It's like a bond that helps us to understand different cultures and different ways and gives us an opportunity to share the things that are important to us. I'd like for us to welcome Olashagan, African storyteller from Tallahassee, Florida.
Hello. How's everybody doing today? Feel all right? My name is Olusegun. Can you say that? Uh-huh. The young people always get it right, but those of us who have advanced a little bit in years, rings funny in the ear. My name comes from the Yoruba language, which is spoken in Nigeria, in West Africa. And when you translate my name into English, it simply means God is victorious, or God wins. So every time you say Olusegun, you're paying some deep respect to someone who's even greater than I. I'm going to teach you a couple of words that I need you to learn before I can tell you any stories, because I have to have some help from you. Now, these words come from the Ashanti language spoken in Ghana in West Africa. There's a word that I will say, and every time I say my word, there's a word that you must say. Now, my word is Ago. Ago. And Ago simply means, do I have your attention? And if I really, really do have your attention, you would answer by saying, Ame. Let me hear you say Ame. You got it. That means, yes, you have my attention, or something like, Okay, let's try it one time. I go. Now, that's the easy part. Let me take this drum off in my hat here, because the hard part is coming up now. Okay, if I say I go and you say what? And we do it three times in succession. After the third time, this is what you have to do. I can do that, right? Let's try it. I go.
Amen.
I go.
Amen.
I go.
Amen.
Woo! Yeah, you got it. That's pretty good. Now remember that. It's going to be on the pop quiz at the end of the performance. Okay. Now I can tell you a story. This story, as far as I know, originated in Florida. And this is the story of the word that the devil made up. Now, I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, my parents used to tell me all the time, don't use words like, mm-hmm, right? Your parents told you that, right? They want you to be polite and courteous. So they say, don't say, mm-hmm. Well, the reason is because that's the word the devil made up. Now, this is what happened. The devil woke up one morning, and he was looking around his territory. You know where that is, right? And he realized that he didn't have enough help. So he decided that he would go up to heaven and get himself a whole bunch of little angels to come and help him out until he got his reinforcements from down in Miami. So he took off and he flew up to heaven. And when he got to heaven, he saw about 1,000 little angels. They looked a lot like these angels that are just walking up here right now. Looked a lot like them. And so he snuck up behind them and he grabbed about 1,000 of them. And he stuffed a whole bunch of them in his mouth. And then he put some under one arm and he put some under the other arm. And he took off, and he's flying down over the earth looking for a place to land. And standing on the ground watching him was that young lady right there on the front row. What's your name? Sarah. Y'all know Sarah, right? Sarah's very observant. She doesn't miss anything. So Sarah looked up at the devil, and she said, hey, old devil, it looks like to me you got yourself a bunch of little angels right there. And the devil looked down there at Sarah, and he opened up his mouth. He said, yeah! Well, you know what happened when he opened up his mouth? All those little angels he had in there got out and started flying around all over the place. So he started chasing them. And while he was chasing them, the ones he had under his arms got away. And all the little angels got away, and they went back up to heaven. And so the devil said, I think I'm going to have to go back up to heaven and get myself some more little angels to come and help me out, because the reinforcements from Miami are still not here yet. So he took off again. And he flew up to heaven, and he saw another group of little angels, about 1,000 of them. Looked like a lot like that. See that group of angels over there? Looked a lot like them. Just like them. And he snuck up behind them, and he grabbed a whole bunch of them. And he put some in his mouth. And he stuffed some under one arm and put some under the other arm, and he took off. And he's flying down over the earth looking for another place to land. And you know who's watching it? Sarah. Sarah don't miss anything, I told you. And so Sarah said, hey, old devil, it looks like to me you got yourself another bunch of little angels right there. Well, the devil looked at Sarah, and Sarah looked back at the devil, same way she's looking at me right now. And the devil tightened up his lips. He said, Well, you know why he said that, right? He didn't want those little angels to get away. And so that's why your parents tell you not to use words like because that's the word the devil made up. I go.
Amen.
I go.
Amen.
I go.
Here
we go. Yeah, you got it. Hey. Woo! Yeah, that's pretty good. You guys know about the Cabbage Patch, right? Okay. I got one more story I'm going to tell, and then y'all got it, okay? You ready? You guys ready? Okay. This story comes from the Ashanti tradition again in Ghana, and it's an Anansi story. How many of you ever heard of Anansi? Let me see. If you heard of Anansi, let me see your hand. You know about Anansi the spider? Yeah, this is a spider story. Okay, well, Anansi, for those of you who don't know about Anansi, Anansi's a very selfish and greedy individual. And he's kind of like, you heard the chief talking about the trickster rabbit kind of character? Anansi's like that, right? He always wants to get the best out of every situation. Well, one time Anansi decided that he wanted to get all of the common sense in the whole world and keep it for himself. Because he figured if he got all of the common sense in the world, that he could become very rich and very powerful. So he went and got himself a gourd, kind of like this one, except it didn't have the beads on it. And he cut the top off of it and hollowed out the inside and made a container. And he traveled all over the world. And every time he would see some common sense, he just reached down there and snatch it up and put it down inside that gourd. And he just went everywhere. Every time some common sense would walk by, he'd just grab it, stick it right down in that gourd. And when he got what he thought was all of the common sense in the world, he put a lid on the gourd and sealed it up. And he says, I'm going to take this gourd, and I'm going to hide it somewhere where no one can get to it. And then I, Anansi, will have all of the common sense in the world, and I'll become very rich and very powerful. So he went into his backyard, and he found the tallest tree in his backyard. He says, I think I'm going to put this gourd way up there in the top of that tree, and nobody will be able to get it. So he tied a string around the neck of the gourd, and he hung the other end of the string around his neck, and the gourd hung down in front of his stomach like this. And he started climbing up that tree. Oh, and he was trying to climb. He was having a very difficult time climbing up that tree. But you know who was down there watching him? Sarah. That's right. I told you, Sarah, don't miss nothing, right? So Sarah looks up at Anansi. She says, hey, Anansi, looks like to me you're having a very difficult time climbing up that tree with that big old gourd hanging down in front of your stomach like that. She said, why don't you take that gourd, and instead of letting it hang in the front, why don't you sling it over your back? And then it'll be out of the way, and you can go ahead on and climb up that tree like you've been trying to do for the last hour and a half. Well, Anansi looked down there at Sarah. She looked back at him with that look she's got right now. And Anansi got angry. He got angry because he said, how in the world could such a great big piece of common sense be coming from somebody like Sarah? Besides, I thought I had it all in the gourd right here. Well, he got so angry that he threw the gourd on the ground, and the gourd broke open. All the common sense got out, started running around all over the place. Well, since Sarah was standing at the bottom of the tree where the gourd broke open, she just reached down and got a whole bunch of common sense right there on the spot, didn't you, Sarah? Uh-huh, see? And every time somebody would see some common sense running around, they reached down and get a little bit. Even I got a teeny little bit myself. And that's why today everybody on Earth has at least a little bit of common sense. I'll go. I'll go. I'll go. I'm happy to report that you all passed the examination. Thank you very much. I'm going to turn it over to the young people now, and I hope to see you again real soon. Thank you.
Let's have another hand for Alicia Gunn. Thank you very much. You know, the Folk Festival has undergone a transition this year. For about the past 15 or 20 years, the Folk Festival was put on by the Bureau of Florida Folklife. And last year, the Bureau of Florida Folklife sort of went away, although its functions are still being performed, but they're being done out of Tallahassee. And in this transition, the new folks that came on board and the one or two that moved over to Tallahassee from here were told, the Folk Festival is going to go on, and that was a concern that a lot of us had. And I know you're glad the Folk Festival is going to go on, but a lot of new people had to do a lot of new jobs. And one of those fellows that had an entirely new job thrust upon him is a gentleman named Brent Tozer. And Brent is running the Folklife area this year, and they just sort of threw it in his lap and said, do it, and it's getting done. And I just think we ought to give him a round of appreciation. I want to introduce to you Brent Tozer.
Well, you're very kind. Folklife, as defined in the Florida statutes, is very similar to the definition that comes from the American Folklife Center. Here at this festival, we are celebrating all sorts of folklife traditions from all sorts of populations, communities, and groups in the state of Florida. Now, I'm about to introduce some folks who seem to me to have traveled almost the furthest with the mostest. But before I do, I want to tell you about the Folk Heritage Awards at 4 o'clock on the old marble stage, and to remind you to look at the apprenticeship program down in the other areas. And we get those tradition bearers from those programs, from the apprenticeships and the Heritage Awards, in the Folklife area to talk in interviews. Now, we also do performances, and this is going to be a performance that I think we'll all enjoy. From West Palm Beach, this group of 37 children and 11 chaperones has been fundraising for weeks to get here. Led by Ms. Lillian Arce, formerly of Chile, these kids, Grupo Folklorico, have been working and learning. They have a dance school. Now, in the apprenticeship program, you see these flyers from the craft square? We kind of formalize relationships that might be formal, might be less formal. But what you have here is a dance teacher who performed at the folk festival here 2 years ago and felt so strongly about the experience that she wanted to bring as many students as she could to this festival. Mrs. Arce has learned the dances of the country and the town of Chile, of the neighboring countries, Bolivia, and the other countries of that region. And when she came to New York, she began to work with students from all sorts of other countries. Ms. Arce was educated at folk schools, at her own schools, in her family. She learned all sorts of dances of cowboys and Indians, as well as the cities and the towns. And in Florida, like when she was living in New York, she has been teaching all sorts of dances from all sorts of Hispanic traditions and all sorts of places. So her daughter, Lillian Jr., has been her manager, her business manager, and has helped me talk on the phone. I see Mrs. Arce coming my way, so I'm going to talk for just a moment more. She's going to introduce small groups of social dances from various Hispanic places. And it may take a moment or two to get together to play these tapes and to do some of these recorded dances. Now, Mrs. Arce and her daughter will be speaking an hour from now in the narrative interview area, and then the large group will be performing in the amphitheater. As well, tomorrow morning, they'll use the wooden dance floor in stage 3. So that's quite a busy schedule, but this is one of the rare times when someone has gone to so much work, and it often happens with group dance. So I see them still coming together. Mrs. Arce, Lillian, ¿puede hablar? Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to give a warm welcome for Mrs. Lillian Arce and Grupo Folklorico.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Lillian Arce. I'm director for Grupo Folklor Latino for West Palm Beach. We have in this moment 65 children. They're 2 years old for 25. Learning, that's for all Spanish country, traditional country for the Latin America. Latin America, they have many countries, 20 countries. We have now dancing for 15 countries, Colombia, Chile, Argentina, Republica Dominica, Honduras, Bolivia, Mexico. It's a lot of countries, and I don't have all on my mind right now. I have introduction for my daughter. She's a teacher. She's a choreographer of our group. He working very hard for us. My daughter, Lillian.
Hello. Good afternoon. My name is Lillian, also as my mother. It's a great pleasure for us to be here today. To demonstrate, to show Latin American traditional dances. Today we're going to show, I believe, 1, 2, 3, 4 dances from Latin America. And does anybody have any questions before we begin, or do you want to see them first and then any questions? This is an open thing. And we're also going to teach you if you guys want to learn in some of the dances too. So, the first dance we're going to go to is the country of Colombia. And the dance there is known as, is called La Cumbia. And the dance is usually danced through the Atlantic coast of Colombia. It's very vibrant, very rhythmic, very flirtatious. This dance is usually danced sometimes at night. They carry candles to light their way as they dance. As we could see, Gustavo, one of our dancers, this is the costume from Colombia. He has his little sack for coffee beans from Colombia. He has the machete for the banana plants in Colombia. And, of course, a poncho for the places of where it's cold, and the hat and the scarf. And Ana, and she has a skirt, which are very long. You dance the dance with the skirt all the times, flirtatious with the partner. And we're going to see now cumbia from Colombia. Country we go to from South America, we're going to go to the Caribbean, to an island that Christopher Columbus gave, La Española. The country is Dominican Republic. There, that country, of course, says their music is very vibrant, very rhythmic. Their main instruments in that country is la tambora, which is percussion, a drum, la güira, and the accordion. You put those instruments together, and of course you get merengue from Dominican Republic.